Hey everyone! We are proud to announce this week's episode is sponsored by Notion. If you're an avid listener of Techish, you'll know how much we love this product. So much, in fact, people have thought that we were sponsored by Notion years ago.
If you haven't used it before, Notion is one tool to get your entire team or company or class to get organized with project management, wikis, and documents, all fully customizable. You can also use it for your own notes and tasks.
We even use Notion to manage this very podcast, from writing and sharing our show notes, to organizing live events, to sales. And because it's centralized, it even serves as a giant wiki. So onboarding new talent and getting them up to speed on all things techish is so simple. You can say goodbye to random Google Docs and all the 20 different tools you're using to manage your business or your project. Work together with dozens, hundreds, or thousands of your teammates in one place.
And if you're a productivity nerd like me, use it for your personal life to track your workouts, reading lists, and favorite quotes. So what you need to do right now is sign up with the link in the show notes to get your account and say hello to the future. Yo everybody, welcome back. Brand new Techish in the building. And we got some good news.
A whole new world. I'm seeing blue. I'm seeing Asian and black woman in the White House. Oh Lord.
Yeah. So as our resident American, like what's your feelings and reactions to the news?
Wow. Relief. Yeah. Just a lot of relief. I'm not going to lie. I was worried. I was resigned to the worst. I had a dream. And we know my dream. I talked about my dream. I was fearing civil unrest, violence, shootings in the streets. Either way. but potentially if the incumbent stayed. And then it just felt like we would never get an answer. It just seemed to really drag on and drag on. I was reminded of how big a country the US is. And then when the news came, so I'm in London, it came kind of Saturday afternoon. I had to stop checking because I was constantly refreshing and I was like, this is so unhealthy. Like my whole morning routine of like staying off my phone until wherever, it's completely gone. I'm like waking up and like immediately checking. It was so unhealthy. So I stopped finally on Saturday and then I just saw this text from my friend and it was like, Harris, Biden! And I was like, what? What? I like immediately turned on the news and I like jumped off of my sofa and did like 5 high kicks. I was like, fuck yes, fuck yes, fuck yes. I was like, I didn't even know I could high kick that much. But yeah, for me, it's just like joy and relief. And, you know, when I watched his speech, I was like, it is so true. Like, you know, let's just focus on healing. I'm not trying to, what's the word? What's the opposite of a sore loser?
A gloating winner.
There we go. Like gloating. Yeah. I'm not trying to be a gloating winner. I'm just like, it was 4 years. Let's just move on, everyone. Let's work together.
Yeah, I think the whole world is relieved, innit? You know, I'm not an American, but I was relieved. I was like, oh, my Lord, there's not a madman with the nuclear codes. Well, that's the interesting thing. He still hasn't conceded. He still hasn't officially given up. He's still claiming that, like, he's won. And it's, he's almost so ridiculous that we're not really paying attention to what it is, which is kind of like a laughable coup.
I know. I think it's terrifying. I think it's really scary. And I think it's a reminder to us that just because one person is going doesn't mean we've solved the problem, right? There's like systemic issues here. There's patriarchy still alive and well. White supremacy still alive and well. This toxic form of capitalism is still alive and well. And people are abusing their power everywhere. Like here we have a world leader doing it on a global stage. But throughout the pandemic, we've seen employers doing it to their staff, governments squeezing out the poorest people. I think we just have to remember that this is like a moment for celebration for some, but it's also not an opportunity for us to now sleep or relax or chill. Like we still need to fight the system because it's broken.
Yeah, so breaking down the kind of voting. So 87% of black people voted for Joe Biden. 66% of the Latinx community voted for Biden. 63% Asian. And then as per usual, actually, the majority of white people voted for Republicans. 57% of white people voted for Republicans. With the majority of white women voting for Trump. Mr. Grab them by the P word. Voted for Trump. Explain that to me. I don't understand. What's going on here?
I mean,
unpack that.
I just feel like I'm going to reference that Bill Burr Saturday Night Live monologue again, because he was right. He's like, y'all been benefiting white women. Don't lie. Don't start pointing the fingers at systemic racism and whatnot, because you're enjoying the spoils of this. And I just wonder if that's what's happening, you know? Like there's an acknowledgement that there is something to be gained through privilege. Maybe it's not something people explicitly say, but it's like, it's a fear of their position and privilege changing if someone who isn't white is in power. You know what I mean? Like maybe it's
kind of
less threatening to have, you know, go with what you know, the devil you know, versus oh, what is a black and Asian woman vice president going to do to us?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think whiteness has always been on a pedestal in that society. So it's like voting for the overtly white supremacist candidate is their way of saying, I don't want to lose that position. Or it could be something as simple as people just voting with their husbands. White men are typically Trump supporters and Republicans. They might just be going with their husbands. I don't know. It's a difficult one to unpack.
Could be
I need
economic
to read a whole book on it.
As well. Could be economic. Maybe someone, you know what? Editors. I know that tech journalists listen to Tech-ish. So y'all need to interview some of these white women who voted for Trump and help us understand them, because these are probably the same white women going on Instagram, posting their black square, posting their hashtag BLM, but now they're voting for Trump. So help me understand this. Come on, journalism, this is your role. Tell the story.
Yeah, I think there is a problem in journalism in the sense that a lot of journalists don't know anybody outside of their kind of circle. So even the fact that 33% of the Latinx community voted for Trump, you know, we always say like, oh, this group's not a monolith and that group's not a monolith and black people are not a monolith. But we like to say it, but I don't think we like to really like believe it because it's like, if one third of the Latinx community can vote for Trump, it basically says that these kind of broad generalizations and groups of people, it's kind of pointless. It doesn't work. Like, you can't intimate, oh, this person's going to vote this way just because, you know, this candidate is a racist or this candidate has said disparaging things. There are people with different interests and different things. There's rich people. There are, you know, within every subgroup, there's also people who are conservative within every subgroup. So it's very confusing. Do you have any thoughts on that one? That 33% of the Latinx community voting for Trump, essentially, who is probably the most anti-immigrant candidate I've ever seen in humanity, well, like, in my lifetime.
Clearly, they left some relatives behind that they don't want coming over, so they're happy to leave them there. I think only through the lens of conversations I've had with my like Filipino family that, you know, immigrated to the US and are now naturalized, got their passport, blue book, all this stuff. I think something happens once you are no longer connected to your old country and your old identity and like fully indoctrinated in the new principles and values and nationalism of the US, where you feel connected to that status quo in a way that you didn't when you first joined the country. And so I think that rhetoric around, do we want them coming in and ruining our economy and taking our jobs, even though, I mean, in my view, this administration did far worse things to ruin the economy. I think they believe that, and they see this vote not necessarily like as a vote against their identity group, but rather like a vote to protect their future in terms of like my future of me, my children, my family, all that kind of stuff. Like, let's face it, people who are very economically minded, very in a self-interested way, which I guess is like most of us, but I guess in the sense of like they're tipping more that way than tipping towards, let me find a balance of being like that slash also supporting public funds because those are valuable too. I think most people that are like leaning towards like my money's my money. are gonna vote Republican.
There's a massive propaganda effort to frame Democrats as communists and socialists, and you've got a lot of Cubans coming from the Castro regime, and you got a lot of Venezuelans who are fleeing communism in Venezuela. So that propaganda kind of works, and it does kind of frighten a lot of people, unfortunately. As ridiculous as it sounds, that works. And I think the Cuban community in Florida has been quite staunch Republican since day one. But yeah, those kind of lazy generalizations, they just don't work anymore. We can't really predict.
Gotta be intersectional. Put respect on Kimberly Crenshaw's name.
What's your views on Kamala then? The representation there, you know, you're black, you're Blasian. Am I allowed to say Blasian? Is that politically incorrect to say Blasian?
Yeah, where did Blasian come from? Did like Tiger Woods bring that phrase to the media?
That's been around for years, but yeah, go on. So,
Okay, yeah. Well, as a fellow Blasian, you know, represent, Blasians unite, let's take over with the superior race. No, I'm kidding. I'm pleased. Do you know what? Because like I've been seeing really interesting tweets, and like one thing I'll say is like going back to this idea of like, let's not forget that we're like challenging systemic bias and systemic prejudice, even though there are some small wins, I think is really important, because I have a lot of politically minded Black women, LGBT plus allies in my social feeds. And, you know, there have been problematic policies that Kamala Harris has put into place that a lot of people find quite questionable. So I kind of want to acknowledge that and say like, yeah, we got to keep challenging bias and privilege in the system. But I do also want to say how incredible it is that there's like a whole generation of children now where this is just normal. And this is like not a thing that's never happened before. And that is setting a norm that I wish I had. I'm not going to lie. I wish I had that. You know, I just grew up always seeing white dudes doing everything. And when people told me I wasn't good enough, it was so easy to believe that and internalize that. And I'm still dealing with that in my 30s, you know, because it's true. When I looked at people who were on the news, on the cover of magazines, I mean, business magazines, politics magazines, I didn't see people like me. And, you know, I think of how many little Black kids, Asian kids probably write in their kindergarten essay, oh, you know, I want to be a president. And maybe some kids laugh at that or like whatever. And like, you know, I don't know, I just feel like it's possible. And I think that's incredible. You can't be what you can't see, right? Like we say this so often. And I just think for that alone, this is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. Separating kind of her political career and her politics and her background, just the representation piece, like it's really important. Representation isn't everything, but it is something. No. And I think that is like the way I would phrase it. But yeah, also, key point, we've got a Jamaican in the White House. I've been waiting to do this since Tekish started. Ryan, give me the dance Osiris now. There we go. Cool, put that in.
Yeah, shout out to that. White House.
Let's talk celebrity news or celebrity tech news, the intersection of both. Beyonce has signed a multi-year content deal with Peloton. So if you don't know Peloton, yes. Do you have a Peloton, Abba? Is that you?
Okay, hang on a minute. I don't have a Peloton, but I got the app.
Entrepreneur, hustling, doing it.
That's so cheap. Dude, that app is very affordable. Very affordable. it's cost effective. Maybe one day I'll get a Peloton, especially if gyms stay closed for so long. But there's like a wait list, and that thing's expensive. And
how much is it? It's thousands of pounds, right? Or dollars, sorry. How much is it?
So yeah, the sets are like anything from like from 2K to 4K, depending on like how many bells and whistles and whatnot you get for it.
Yeah.
Because you can get like
that, man. I see them hospital fees, the hospital workshop fees. You can afford that. But okay, yeah, no.
Fake news. So the basic starts, and this is sterling, 1,750, the way up to the family package, 2,195. And then, of course, I think you pay for the app as well once you've got it. So you pay £39 a month for the app, or you pay $9.99 a month. you don't have the device, but you can do virtual classes. And like, I'm not going to lie, they have amazing instructors. Chelsea Jackson Roberts is one of my favorite amazing Black women. She did some great meditations during BLM that got me through. And I love the music integration. Like, it's just a very well-designed app. Honestly, like if you haven't tried it out, check out the free trial. And now Beyonce's music's going to be on there. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
And the stock price went up quite significantly just based off that news.
It's like that TV ad never happened.
Oh my lord, do you remember that ad? Oh, let's explain it. Yeah, so there was maybe I'll put the link in the show notes, but literally the most cringeworthy ad for any company that ever happened was done by Peloton. It just didn't work, and it was getting absolutely roasted on Twitter. And they kind of have bounced back from that. But one thing I wanted to ask you: so right now, when you work out, is the music just like generic music, or do they have other artists?
They
music?
Have tunes. They've got good got music. They have like Robert Glasper, Common, Mos Def, or Yasiin Bey, Tribe Called Quest. They've got big name artists.
Is this app stuck in the 90s? Why are you naming them just guys from the 90s? Is this a time machine?
Actually, boys. Now that you say it. No, I mean, these just could be the themed ones I'm listening to. I did recently do a 90s themed class. No, but I honestly thought they already had a licensing deal with Spotify, and maybe it could be, but it was like restricted. Right. And I guess Beyonce, is she on Spotify? Not all of her. Oh no, some of her stuff is on.
Some of her stuff is, some of it isn't. But it's interesting because of the whole like idea around music licensing. Mm-hmm. I've done a deep dive into this. I have a friend of mine who's in the music industry, and we were talking about masters. So who owns the masters to like a song, for example, right? And he's independent, so he owns his masters, for example.
Oh, okay, cool.
And then the reason why we start talking about it is this company called Hypnosis. I'll put the link in the show note. They have recently been buying up the publishing rights for all of these like classic songs, from like Eurythmics Sweet Dreams to like all the Single Ladies, Beyonce, to a lot of Justin Timberlake songs, right? Yeah, they bought up all of the publishing. They bought up all the publishing of a lot of producers and whatever, and they collated it into one company, into like one stock. And essentially they believe that music is more valuable than like oil. It's a very durable asset. If a song has been a classic for 20 years, most likely it will be a classic for another 20 or 30 or 40 years, right?
Yeah.
But it astounded me the amount of artists who didn't own their masters. Like a lot of those songs, like Beyonce's Single Ladies, I don't think she owned them. I think when she was signed and did that. Yeah, because when you sign to a record label, they take the ownership. You don't get the ownership unless you buy it back. Like a lot of your favorites don't own their music, like Rihanna. Wow. Like a lot of them have to try to go back and buy it. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because I'm going to bring up somebody who our reviewers absolutely hate, Kanye West. He pitched... He pitched an idea which was like, does music need a YC? So Y Combinator, right? Essentially, Y Combinator is the idea of a company comes, you know, for 20% or whatever, you know, they'll invest a certain amount of money. They'll incubate you, they'll train you, whatever, give you tactics, whatever best practices, and then they'll pitch you to like new investors, right? Does music need that? Where the artist gets to keep their ownership, but maybe they get a cash injection. Now, here's an idea. You come to me, you're a musician, you're an independent musician, you've got a certain amount of streams on Spotify. I look at the metrics. I say, okay, you got this many downloads, SoundCloud's popping, your Bandcamp's popping. We're going to give you a cash injection for 20%. Once you've paid it back, or maybe we own 20% of your masters, but you get to keep the rest of it. And then you go on, once you've paid it off, or once you've kind of gone on, you can keep doing your thing. We give you the tactics, like a label, but more like YC. We incubate you, we train you, best practices, blah, blah, blah. And then you're off on your way. Mm. What do you think? Shark Tank, tell me.
I like this idea of seeing licenses as commodities. There's like...
I put you on the spot.
There's like a film about this. Isn't there like a film or a TV show where someone's trying to... Is it an episode of... Oh, it's an episode of Silicon Valley.
I ain't seen it, but go on.
Anyway, there's an episode of Silicon Valley where someone does that. Anyway, I think there's definitely logic in that. And I know like my partner was recently trying to get...
I forgot he was a musician.
But this is actually his other job. So just like as a creative for like an agency. And so he wanted to find out how much it would cost to use like a well-known pop artist's, I can't remember. It was like 30-second clip.
Yeah.
But it would go on an online video, like on YouTube, and be there for up to 4 months or something like that. And it was going to cost like almost like a quarter of a million or something. It was like 100 and something thousand. And I was I need to write a pop song. Now, I don't know how much of that actually goes straight to the artist's pockets, but I guess what I was saying was like, I've definitely not valued like the IP of a track enough. And to the point of this, to this model, like if you then like just think about all the applications of it, it's going to get used in an advert, it's going to get used in a movie, it's going to be Christmas number one. I don't know. So yeah, I actually think this idea has legs. I also think that for a very long time, I think this version of capitalism has failed to really capitalize on the creative industries, and it has a bias against it, and it's only like commoditized it in quite a basic way. So I think there is real opportunity for this, especially if we think about like automation and where that's going. And I think creativity will only be more valued as the world continues to get more automated.
But you need to own, that's what I'm saying, you need to own it. A lot of these artists don't own nothing. And that's why COVID has been so bad, because you would think streaming is going up during the lockdown, but these artists, they relied on touring. Their money wasn't in the streams. Their money was in the touring, because the labels who own the masters were sucking up the majority of the profits.
But this is the thing, like...
Yeah. From the streaming sales. So it's like, you know, maybe we need a music expert to break it down, but...
Or legislation? You know, because obviously what's happening is there's a power imbalance. So when new artists are signed, and I don't think it's just music, I think it happens in a lot of stuff. I mean, when I was watching Dave Chappelle's SNL monologue, he was saying how like his show just got sold. Well, Chappelle's show is going to be streaming on Netflix and he's not getting paid for that. And I was like, what? That's weird. But I just feel
But that's how they do it though. That's how Netflix does it. Like when you sell to Netflix, like I think Michaela Cole, she didn't sell to Netflix her last show because they give you like $1 million, $2 million, but that's it. You get no residuals. Wow. You're out of the game. But I interrupted you. Carry on. What were you saying?
All I was going to say is that I feel like creators spend so much of their life struggling that when they finally have an opportunity to hit major distribution channels, they're presented with like a lump sum or something like that. And they can't quite fathom how valuable their product actually is. So when it then scales infinitely, or not infinitely, but you know, like
potentially
in huge increments over time. Yeah, exactly. Exponentially. They're then like, oh man, I really should have asked for like a cut or like a revenue share or a revenue split or something like that. But at the time they're so powerless to do it because labels will just be like, take the deal or go. Yeah. And I think that's the power dynamic that has to shift for things to be more fair.
But I think the reason why the YC analogy may work is because a particular breed of privileged founders Yes. They don't have that. Even though they are essentially asking for money, most of the contracts are standardized. You can just pretty much sign a term sheet from YC or from most incubators and know that they're not really going to rip you off. The power is firmly in your hands.
Yes.
And then when you go to a pitch, VCs are fighting to give you money if you're at YC, for example, right? So that's the kind of one industry where I see it, where the creators still have the power. Maybe too much power if you look what happened with Zuckerberg and how much control he has over Facebook. Like, he has like a special board seat where he can never really be fired. So that's maybe too much power. But yeah, it's interesting. There's someone who's going to, you know, innovate on that space. Hopefully, I don't know if it's going to be Kanye, but somebody will do it. So actually, as we record today, is an Apple event happening right now.
One more thing.
Yeah. And I was thinking about it. I was like, wow, like, I don't care. Like, and I don't think anybody else really cares anymore. Whereas once those events really did have a hold over the, I don't know, over the public, but at least people that are in the tech industry. And I figured out why. So I found a tweet. I don't know who the person is. They're, you know, a verified person. Essentially, they were like, oh, the new 13-inch MacBook Pro. And it had a long list of features like, you know, 5x CPU core, blah, 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 megabits, whatever, whatever. Like, and I think the one insight that Steve Jobs had, which is that people don't care about that. The reason why when he came back to Apple and he did the whole kind of like think different campaign, it was that he realized like it's more about how people feel about a product and what it says about them versus the kind of don't compete on features in that way. And I think Apple has kind of gone back in that direction where it's like they're not really innovating and now they're trying to impress us with like, you know, the memory size and the camera is 2% better. And it's like, I worry as a company, they're no longer differentiated in any real sense anymore. And the brand equity that Jobs built up is slowly dissipating. Was this event on your radar? Did you care?
I think the first thing to say is that I have never been an Apple early adopter, right? Like, I didn't have the first generation iPod. I had the second generation iPod. I only got my first MacBook because my older sister didn't want hers anymore. And until then, I just had Windows and Dell. Yeah. And I guess once I then got that MacBook, I was like, okay, I can only do Mac. But, you know, I was already at university then. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, I'm probably not a good person to ask, even though I'm a diehard Apple fan now, like, as soon as I switched to iPhone, I think I went from like BlackBerry, remember those?
Oh my Lord.
to iPhone. And I've stayed loyal since then. And like, I'm, you know, using Mac now and like all the iOS and all these like apps, and I have Apple TV. So I'm definitely like in the ecosystem and have been for a long while. But I feel like I was always the kind of person where I would just wait to see what people were saying about the Apple events on Twitter. And it's also because I wouldn't say I'm like anti-consumerism, but I'm not an enthusiastic consumer. So I don't like that there's a new phone every year. I think it's super damaging to the environment, and it's just creating this norm that you need to have a new phone every year, which is nonsense. So the first thing I want to say is that I don't think I'm the best person to ask. Now, I totally hear you on that. But I think one thing that is really interesting, it'll be interesting to see how the Apple stocks are performing today and the rest of the week, is that some people are saying that some of the things that have happened at this event today are reaffirming why Apple is the best and why Apple is really good. So they've got, I don't know, a new chip or something. I guess they've got new MacBooks.
I don't care. This doesn't excite me. I think particularly because the recent phone they brought out was just like a complete dud. It was like, these phones are now pretty much the same. And a lot of it's not their fault. There's only certain much innovation that can happen within a certain category after a while. And I think phones have kind of hit their crescendo. I don't know where else it can go. But I don't know if Apple's the company that's going to even capitalize on the next wave, whatever that may be.
You're not excited by the fact that you could do stuff 3x faster with a new Mac. Are you not? I think that's exciting. I'm really impatient. And if this M1 chip means my CPU, okay, 2.8 times faster, that's fast. That's pretty fast. I mean, I don't even know if my internet is fast enough to keep up with that. But I guess if I'm like, I don't know, editing a video or something, that's pretty cool. 20 hours of video playback on battery? Come on.
But I was going to ask you if you would buy it, but considering what you said about Peloton and how you only put the free app, I'm gonna keep it moving and move on.
I'm not a late adopter, but I'm not an early adopter.
Hey everyone, we are proud to announce the all-in-one workspace Notion is this week's sponsor of Techish.
This pandemic has fast-forwarded us to a remote-first working world. And in this brave new world, there are a few startups set to have more of an impact this next decade on the way we work than Notion.
If you haven't used it before, Notion is an all-in-one tool to get your entire team or company to get organized with project management, wikis, and documents, all fully customizable. You can also use it for your own notes and tasks. In all honesty, if I wasn't silly enough to want to be an entrepreneur, I'd love to work on a product that was at the intersection of beautiful design and utility, and that's Notion to a T.
Lucky for you, they are currently hiring. So if you are looking to join a fast-growing team, or if you're looking for a career change, they've got roles open across engineering, marketing, community, operations, and more. Go to www.notion.so/careers and get applying. Link in the show notes as well. Hallelujah, praise the Lord, there's a vaccine for COVID-19. Pfizer, is it a silent P? I always try to say both letters at the same time. Pfizer has announced that they have a COVID-19 vaccine that is 90% effective. It hasn't been tested on millions and millions and millions yet. I think it's like a five-figure sum of folks that has been tested on. Is it 45,000?
I think they've got 164 people who have done it. That's it.
It was like 14,000.
So Pfizer has logged 94 total COVID-19 cases with a 90% effectiveness rate. And we're waiting for them to get to 164. So it's sub 100 people who have had this vaccine.
Okay, but the trial included 43,358 participants. So that's
okay,
how...
got you.
I don't know how they find these people. But thank you for your service. Thank you for your service. Michael, what are you thinking? Is there light at the end of the tunnel? Are we going to party again? Carnival, festival? Are we there?
Nah, because you know what, man? Bill Gates is out here trying to put microchips in us. That's what Bill Gates is trying to do. I've got my third eye open. I'm ready. I'm aware. Nah, I'm joking. What do you call it? Yeah, you know what? It's still early days, but I think it's I'm seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. And that light wasn't there a couple of weeks ago in tandem with the Biden news. It's all good, man. I'm happy. The universe seems to be doing something in our favor.
This is good. But I also want to say, this is like an important message for mental health. I think there are a lot of people who have been waiting for this period of life to end, this pandemic period, this lockdown period. Like, okay, when the lockdown ends, I can go back to taking care of myself. When the lockdown ends, I can go back to having a routine. When the lockdown ends, I'll go back to, you know, connecting with folks, blah, 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 blah. Look, the vaccine is here. Hooray. This is the fastest a vaccine has been made in human history. What a time to be alive. This is incredible. However, when the vaccine comes out, it is going to go to vulnerable people first. It's going to be rolled out in stages. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, the sooner you can accept that 2021 is probably going to be a lot like 2020, except we know what to expect as far as pandemic and lockdown goes, the better you can start to manage what you need to survive on a mental health front.
But yeah, I agree. Amen to that. So John Boyega, essentially, who is the star of Star Wars, pardon the pun, star of Star Wars, he, if you remember back in the day, like a few months ago, he took part in a BLM rally and he was like, yo, being quite forthright and just saying, he kept it real. He spoke from his heart and was like, just had enough of the oppression that we have to view black people are having and taking, and you know, police brutality and all that stuff, right? And now he mentioned at the time he was scared for his career, to be honest. And months later, even now, he still says, to be honest, I don't know what impact it will have on my career. And it does cross my mind. And it just made me think, why is it so hard to be our genuine, just outspoken black self sometimes in a kind of corporate world or in a world of just like where our checks are written by people who don't look like us? And how do we maintain that balance? How do we maintain that sanity? Like, I'm an entrepreneur, so I'm kind of separated from it, but my customers could leave me if I say something too mad. Do you know what I'm saying? Or like, I was deemed mad. How do we maintain sanity and still stay true to ourselves?
Yeah, I love that he has shared this. Someone with his profile and his status opening up and saying, I'm worried about how my activism could harm my career in an industry that is racist and anti-black. You know, I'm always thinking of Joaquin Phoenix's BAFTA acceptance speech where he calls out the racism in the industry and the anti-blackness in the industry and says, we have to do better. And it's on all of us. You know, we are the reason why things aren't changing. If you haven't seen that BAFTA acceptance speech, please do. So the first thing I want to say is thank you to John, because I think when someone of his status starts that conversation, it's an invitation for the rest of us to reflect on how it's affected our own life. I think it's true. There are basically people who are now going to see him as like Is he going to be a difficult person? Is he going to start holding us accountable to how many Black people are in the staff, are in the production team, or on the this or on the that, which is the way Hollywood is going. And I think that's really sad. But, you know, hopefully those people will fail anyway, because they're not changing with the time. So I think it's great that he's starting this conversation. I think this is true for so many people, like not just him. I mean, I'm even thinking of jobs where I've just spoken my mind or called something out and people are just like, you know, I don't work there anymore. But I mean, sometimes even now in my current role, I say things that people don't agree with and people take issue with. And unfortunately, that's what's going to happen when you're a Black leader, when you're a Black person, when you're any other underrepresented group speaking out about your existence and what you see in the world, because what you see and what you live and what you feel is not the status quo. It's going to make people who haven't seen that and who don't agree with that and feel threatened by that, it's going to make them uncomfortable. It's going to make them not like you. And I think, unfortunately, that's just part and parcel of the job. The good thing is, usually, hopefully, especially the way the world is going now, those people are in the minority and they're not on the, you know, rocket ships and the fast trains. They're on the old and decrepit, dilapidated, increasingly outdated trains, and that's okay.
Yeah, amen to that. Yeah, twofold. I'm you know, I'm very passionate about, you know, representation within existing corporations and infrastructure. So, you know, increasing diversity within Hollywood and tech companies, blah, blah, blah. But I also feel like the second component is owning our own. And once we own our own, we will have less of these kind of worries. The reality is, most of us who are worried about speaking up on behalf of the Black community or being too outspoken or being too difficult is because most of us are getting paid by white folks. And that's not necessarily a rude thing to say. It's just the reality, right? You know what I'm saying? These are corporations that are majority white owned and majority white run. And people feel uncomfortable when you're being too forthright with the truth, right? And that's the sad reality. And I think part of the reason why I try to support Black business and part of the reason why I try to encourage my folks when they come to me with an idea, I say to them, go pursue it, try your best and make it happen, is because until we own our own, enough of us do, this will still be a problem. And yeah, like I hear my friends, sometimes I'll listen to them on a Skype call or a Zoom call, who uses Skype, on a Zoom call. And I'm like, fam, that's not your voice. Like, I can hear them speaking. I'm like, that's not you. Like, that's tiring. Do you get what I'm saying? Even the smallest things, like just the tone of voice or the way they're speaking. And I'm like, I've kind of released myself from that bondage because I own my own company. But that is like a small step. That's a small indication of the same problem where you just can't be yourself. I don't know how to explain it. Like, I'm hearing you speaking one tone of voice when you talk to me, and then I'm hearing another tone
code
of voice.
Code switching.
But there's a difference between, I get code switching, but it's like, it's almost like I'm not threatening. Please don't think of me as threatening, right? Because it's, I don't know. Maybe you're right. It's just, it's part of the parcel and it's just part
of
the
game. Dude, we gotta do what we gotta do to survive.
Please don't take this as me saying, why are you doing this? I agree. Do what you gotta do to survive. Take two sets of notes. Exist in the world that exists, but let's dream of a different one and let's work towards a different one. That's what I try to do. I'm not saying that, yo, just go in there and be like, yo, fam, just go into work and just, you know. Yeah, I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that there's a correlation between the two. You know what I'm saying? That kind of code switching and that kind of having to kind of not be your full self also means that you can't say what you want, right?
Of course.
And I'm saying it's systemic and it's up and down. And then the one potential solution is we need to encourage, obviously, more Black business and support Black business so that it's less of a problem going forward.
Yes. Snap. Super excited to announce that Hustle Crew has teamed up with Everpress to launch a limited edition collection featuring the designs of Black creators. There are 4 t-shirts in this collection. Designers like Estelle Enot, Nikki Adebiyi, Burungi Kawuya, and Matthew Pierce. Check it out. All of the purchases that you make will directly support their work. So please go on everpress.com/hustle-crew-collection and get a t-shirt now. The collection will end in 13 days. It's limited edition. So don't delay. Get some stocking fillers, early Christmas presents, and support Black creators. Link in the show notes.
Yo, everyone. Thank you for listening. That's been this week's Techish. Hit us up on the hashtag Techish. Let us know what you thought of all the various topics that we covered. Extra-ish, our Patreon podcast, if you want to get more Techish in your earpiece. Anything else, Abba, you want to add?
Come on, O'Hara. No, joking. Oh, yeah. And please, please, please keep sending in your reviews. Apple Podcasts, preferably, because we want to rise up those charts. Here is a review from Miss Afrokan in Great Britain. She left this review recently. My weekly listen on what's happening in the intersection of tech and entrepreneurship. Thank you so much, Miss Afrokan. As always, we love to hear from you. So please keep those reviews coming.
Yeah, love it. Peace. Ciao.
Bye.